This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
Richard Sherman is kind of becoming lovable again. I didn't think it was going to be possible the way he left Seattle and the way the first year transpired, but man, listening to him yesterday, he was his most charming self, whether it was expressing some of the underlying resentment he had toward Jim Harbaugh, which will always play well in Seattle, or it was talking about the breakup with Seattle with a smile on his face and saying he was focusing on the relationship he was in now in a very friendly exchange. I found myself kind of thinking back and wondering where it all went wrong. And man, could it have been salvaged? Because when it's good, it's great, Paul.
How many people do you think look at Richard Sherman and think to themselves that they don't miss him? How many people do you think in this city do you feel no longer have that same kind of love for Richard Sherman?
I think 60% feel about like how I do, which was it was great when it was here and it was time for it to be done. And no matter how well it's worked out in San Francisco, it doesn't make me think that Seattle made the wrong decision. But then maybe they're like me, and when they hear him asked by a Seahawk fan to discuss the breakup with Seattle in cut number three, they find their hearts, I don't know if it's melting or palpitating a little bit, but man, you remember just what had you so smitten about him.
I also want to say this. I'm a huge Seahawks fan. I know I messed up, okay? I still care about you.
I appreciate that.
And I know I made some mistakes.
Okay.
And if you give me another chance, and if you just think about coming back, I promise I'll treat you right. Yeah. I just want you to think about that, okay?
I really appreciate that, and I'm so thankful for the time we had. You know, it was such an incredible relationship. It had its ups and it's had its downs. And right now, you know, the relationship I'm in, I'm so happy, and I'm so thankful for the people I have with me. And they came to me at a time when I was really down and out, and they didn't give up on me. And you know, there's something about that you can just appreciate genuinely. And so, you know, I just try to focus on them right now. I don't have time to think about all the relationships.
My mom misses you. Everybody back in Seattle misses you. We love you and we miss you. And we hope that someday you'll give us another chance.
I'll still love them too, you know. But it's just the hurt and the scar is still there. And the love I have right now, I'm really focused on the present. And that's all my attention can take right now.
I respect that you had to do what you had to do at the time.
I appreciate it.
But we'll be there waiting for you.
I appreciate that.
All right, I love you, Richard.
There it is. It's so charming. It's Richard at his best. He really is an endearing and caring guy. He really is. He's got some rough edges, and there are some times where I do think he's got a need to have the last word. He's really funny.
I love that he played along there, because how many athletes would do that? And how many athletes would immediately get what the person asking that question was trying to do? Not many.
And be entertained by it and kind of play along with it. It was Richard at his best. And another way that I would say is Richard at his best, when his animosity is targeted at somebody you don't necessarily like Skip Bayless, when he went on that show and just drove it straight into a ditch.
My life is better than yours.
It was awesome. It was uncomfortable. It made a complete farce out of everything they do on those shows. I thought it was glorious. Or when he's asked, how many times have you heard a player talk about wanting to put a coach he once played for, entirely out of the lead, like he did here in cut number one?
What did that do for me in this? Oh, honestly, I wanted to put him out the league. And once I got that done, I mean, I got no animosity towards the 49ers or any organization. You know what I mean? Once I became a free agent, every team was available for me to go. I had conversations. I felt like this was the best fit. I felt like this was the place I could go and we could win. And it's worked out well.
It's super villain. Like, have you ever heard another player claim responsibility and credit for pushing an entire coach out of the league?
No, they haven't.
Once I got him out of the league.
I think a lot of you guys have seen Billy Madison. And in Billy Madison, there's a scene where Steve Buscemi has a list of people that have wronged him over the years. I'm wondering what Richard Sherman does when he has finally vanquished the person that has wronged him. Did Jim Harbaugh's name disappear from a list that maybe he had?
No, because 5 years later, he's still bringing up the fact and taking credit for pushing him out of the league. No, I think once you're on the list, you're always on the list.
He hasn't
gone and unblocked me. I don't know if there's any sort of repairing of the bridges that were there. I want to compare that to Frank Clark, who, if we're keeping with the theme of breakups, Frank Clark is the person. You weren't committed in the same way you were to Richard Sherman, but there was a fling that happened with Frank Clark. You were dating. There were some pretty good times, and it wasn't all bad. But now, post-breakup, you look, and it's the ex that's posting incessant glamour shots on social media.
Thirst traps.
Yeah, including, hashtag blessed, sunset cocktails, all of the how great my life is. He's, in cut number two, he's referring to himself in the third person.
I don't compare myself to no other defensive end in the league. I feel like my skill set is unique, especially you talk about Frank Clark. When I'm healthy, I don't feel like it's a lot of defensive ends who can compete with me or play football at the level I play at. I play at an extremely high and aggressive level where I don't tolerate a lot of stuff that offensive players do. And, I'm sure he's going to block and do all those good things and make some good catches and stuff, but at the end of the day, Frank Clark is going to be on the field, and they have to see me. So,
double up. Two third persons.
When Paul Gallant speaks in the third person, he's doing it ironically. He's not doing it actually seriously. What's weird is that that sounds like it's something that has slowly morphed into a giant meteor of obnoxiousness.
I do like the fact that he won't tolerate blocks. I don't tolerate the kind of things that a lot of offenses try. I don't tolerate blocks. I like that idea. I don't tolerate double teams.
Yeah.
That part was entertaining to me. At the end of the day, and I don't know how you are, Paul, I'm a pretty petty, shallow person. And listening to all of this, I would say that Richard Sherman has been much more entertaining. And in that way, I kind of feel like, oh, it wouldn't be so bad if his team were to win in the battle between the two former Seahawks defensive players. But I also know that once I see him on the field on Sunday, that it is immediately going to kick into me that I don't want him to be happier than I do. It's not per se that I want him to be miserable anymore. I just don't want him to be happier than me, and I know how much that Super Bowl would mean to him. I know the validation he would take from it, and I know that I would feel that he won, and I don't want him to have that satisfaction. So even though Frank Clark is the more obnoxious of the two, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be rooting for the Chiefs.
Richard Sherman, deleted Facebook, hit the gym real hard, and is still a little bitter, except you don't really get to see it as much. You know, it's that person posting some pretty tame Instagram posts, but you can kind of see that he's been working out, not shoving it in your face, but definitely wants you to see it. That's the Richard Sherman in the breakup. Now, the Harbaugh thing, that's how you know that he's still a little bitter about the breakup, but he's going to be a bigger man, and he's going to be above it. And Frank Clark is exactly that. He's doing, Instagram boss babe stuff.
I feel like Sherman, though, would be posting a picture of himself at the pool, living his best life in a certain different way, but there would be some sort of motivational quote about all the things that have happened to him. Here's my question for you guys. I mean, do you blame him for feeling that way about the end?
No, not at all. Not at all. No. In fact, if I was him, I would feel like I want to win the breakup, and then I'm going to maybe be kind of act above it, but have a couple of subtle digs, a couple of side eyes. No, I don't blame him at all. And I think that he's come back from an injury that a lot of people, real actual assessment. He came back from an injury a lot of people wondered whether he would be back from, and he's come back as good a player as he's ever been. He's played better than the Seahawks anticipated or projected when they decided to cut him. I don't know if he'd still be here. I mean, they would have had to re-sign him after last season. He had 1 year left on his deal, so it's not like they let him go with 3 years left on his contract. I don't know if he'd still be here. I don't think it would have been copacetic had he stayed. There's no doubt that Richard Sherman, in the way that he's come back from a torn Achilles, has outperformed what would have been a reasonable estimate for a cornerback in his 30s.
And look, that part's cool. And there are a lot of 49er players I like. I got to admit it. I don't like 49er fans.
Stop it, Paul.
I will stop
it, Paul.
But it's hard for me not. I've always loved Richard Sherman. And it took a little bit of time to get to that point. But when I first noticed him with the "you mad, bro" thing with Tom Brady, I thought to myself, Well, I mean, Tom Brady did kind of handle that fairly pettily. And when the Seahawks absolutely stomped Peyton Manning in that offense in the Super Bowl, that Legion of Boom defense, I'm always going to have an affinity for them because Petty Paul did not want to see Peyton Manning win a Super Bowl, and he wanted him to get stomped in that Super Bowl. So if I had to pick between Richard Sherman and Frank Clark, I'm picking Richard Sherman, especially after Frank Clark talking about Frank Clark and how Frank Clark is the Frank Clarkest Frank Clark.
I just don't want to see Richard Sherman celebrate a Super Bowl. I just don't think I've got it in me. I don't think I've reached that point of maturity. Maybe a couple more endearing days where Richard makes me and reminds me of how great it was, but I don't want to see that vindication because I know that even if he's really complimentary, suddenly in there he's like, you know what you guys missed out on? And he'll be like, argh! It's Danny and Gallant. It's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
The transfer portal, Paul.
The Huskies
are hosting a quarterback who is in the transfer portal. KJ Costello, formerly of Stanford.
What do you think about
him? Eligible to play right away. I love the idea of getting him here. Really talented player who I don't think ever quite played up to his peak. He's played pretty well the couple times the Huskies have seen him. Competing, you don't have an entrenched starter. You've got Sermon, and then you've got Dylan Morris, who would be entering. He redshirted last year, so he would be a redshirt freshman. Throw him in there and compete. I do feel if KJ Costello ends up coming here, that's going to cost you one. I'm not sure if both of those quarterbacks might not consider leaving. I would think that and hope that they would think they can compete and win the job, but we'll see. That would get to be a pretty crowded quarterback field if KJ Costello, but I want him here.
I think there's a danger if Washington becomes known for letting guys transfer for 1 year to play quarterback. I think that if I were a young quarterback that thought I needed some time to develop, I would be a little hesitant to maybe commit to Washington if Costello comes aboard and if he gets the starting gig.
You're right. Here's the one thing is we've got Sam Heward, the lethal left-hander with the famous last name in these parts, who's waiting in the wings, who will be on campus a year from now. So that's kind of lurking there in the background.
Okay.
That's kind of lurking. So
there's a plan.
Yes, there is a long-term successor. It's going to complicate how we get to that, how we bridge to that. The chosen one, Sam Heward, the lethal left-hander, will be an interesting question.
What to watch for?
No pressure, Sam.
Lethal left-hander is a fantastic nickname. Good job with the alliteration.
Swing it, man.
Mike Hopkins, head coach of the Husky basketball squad, is going to be on with Bob, Dave, and Moore this afternoon. And look, he's going to be asked some questions about Jaden McDaniels. I'm curious as to how he'll answer them.
He would not commit to starting McDaniels. That'll be the first thing if they've decided what they'll do this week as they host Arizona on Thursday. He's got a tough decision. He's got a program that he's got to think about long term. He's got a really talented player that things have not panned out with. And you've got a very disappointing season, which even if Jaden McDaniels is all on board and playing with the team the way he envisions it, it's an uphill climb to make any postseason tournament right now. They're tied for last in the conference. They're bad. And they've had a really good season from Isaiah Stewart.
That's the worst part of all.
What to watch for?
Inside the NBA, which I think is the best sports show. It's my favorite sports show, at least, because I love how those guys interact with each other. They had a program last night in the wake of Kobe Bryant's death, and it was a group of five guys sitting on the court there. Dwayne Wade, Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, Ernie Johnson, and Shaquille O'Neal. And Shaquille O'Neal, understandably, was the most emotional of them all when he talked about the death of his former teammate.
You know, it just makes me think that in life, sometimes instead of holding back certain things, we should just do.
Do you wait?
Hold on, my gosh.
Okay, go.
We up here, we work a lot. And I think a lot of times we take stuff for granted. Like, I don't talk to you guys as much as I need you to. The fact that we're not going to be able to joke at his Hall of Fame ceremony. We're not going to be able to say, hi, I got five, you got four. The fact that we're not going to be able to say, if we would stay together, we could have got 10. Those are the things that you can't get back. And with the loss of my father, my sister, and my thing, that's the only thing I wish I could just say something to him again. Last time I talked to him was when we were here and I asked him to get 50 and he got 60. It's the last time I spoke to him. And I just wish I could have, you know, so it definitely changes me. I have to, because I work a lot. You guys know what I do. I work probably more than the average guy, but I just really have to now just take time and just call and say, I love you.
I was actually chopping up onions while watching this. I actually was crying as well. That was hard. That was really hard to see. And it made me think, too. I mean, you know what? When you got people in your life that you really care about, don't hesitate to let them know that. It was very nice this morning getting a nice, really long, I love you text from my mom. I got to make a phone call to my dad, I feel like, afterwards. It was really powerful. And inside the NBA, they do a great job of tapping into all of your emotions. And they do it in such an unpredictable way. It's very, very great job what they did last night.
It is Danny and Gallant. Next, we've got the professor with the morning drive from Miami.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, the Super Bowl radio experience rolls on for you. What did you go through yesterday?
Now, by the way, I was just thinking about Jaden McDaniels. I know that Isaiah Stewart's a one and done, and you know Jaden's a freshman and all that. Is this like a half and done? How would you do this if he can't get the starting job?
Well, it's a great question, and whether or not he's going to finish the season, I think I don't want to assume or say, hey, there might be trouble there. But he didn't start the year transferring with him. They didn't, when they went overseas, when they went to Italy, he didn't go on that trip. So I think this relationship might have been a little bit rockier than we've all known. Or at least there's some more turbulence than we'd have hoped. But yeah, it's disappointing seeing the direction it's taken.
Yeah, is the basketball portal the same as the football portal? Is that a little different?
Well, it would be different in this way. A lot of the transfers who are playing right away are guys who have gotten their degree, and once you get your degree, you can transfer to another institution to pursue a graduate area of study that your school doesn't and have eligibility right away. In basketball, because he's played, he wouldn't be eligible to play for another school next year. So if he left, he wouldn't be able to step on the floor and immediately play.
Yeah, so he might have to go overseas then.
Or just go straight to the NBA.
Forgive me for bringing up basketball at a football time, but yeah. I was just kind of rattling through my brain.
Yeah, 6'9" with a jump shot. He might go straight to the NBA, which is what many people thought. And the league doesn't tend to, it doesn't matter how you finished your freshman year if they think that you've got the talent or the skills to make an impact at the next level.
But Paul, back to your question. It's like, and it's really picking up today. I mean, you can just see Radio Row is now buzzing. And again, for the first 2 days, particularly Monday, you know, it was still downcast because of the Kobe Bryant loss. And then you can still see a little bit in everybody's mind. But now I think everybody, as I kind of thought it would be by Wednesday, just kind of hitting on football. And of course, I mean, it is just absolutely loaded with guests, and we're just swamped with guests. And I mean, after we get done with this segment, I think we have like about four tapings in about an hour and a half. And I mean, really good people. So, I mean, this has been fantastic. Curtis Rogers, Jasmine, of course, helping out too. It's been fantastic.
John, some sad news in football this morning. Chris Dolman, Hall of Fame defensive end, primarily played for the Minnesota Vikings, died at the age of 58.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, particularly, I mean, I think he was 55, 56 years old. And I still remember, of course, I'm a little tighter with him because, I mean, he went to Pitt and, you know, certainly was one of the best pass rushers of his era. And I still remember it was a little bit of a slow push to get him into the Hall of Fame. But I just remember how dominant he was when he was with the Minnesota Vikings. And I think you can see from, you know, most of the pass rushers have already gone on Twitter and just talked about what a loss this was. In fact, I just literally passed Chris Carter, who was doing a segment in Dallas. And I was like, I was going to talk to him a little bit about Chris. But again, what a great player he was, because, you know, again, a guy that was just born to be a pass rusher. And it's kind of like in Devin Clowney's case, too. He was also good stopping the run, but a great football player who, you know, got his due but passed away at a very, very young age.
John, I'm really confused looking back at a place that I just came from, Houston, and looking at the Houston Texans. And look, I used to talk with Bill O'Brien. I felt like I got along with Bill O'Brien. But the fact that he continues to get more and more power, as he has now been named the general manager in addition to being the head coach of the Houston Texans, is mind-boggling to me. What do you think about it?
Well, it's not good. I mean, I think, you know, unless you're Bill Belichick, it's very, very difficult to be the coach general manager. Because, again, how do you budget your time and how do you try to do the right things? Because, you know, now not only – because, again, when you get into contract negotiations, it can get pretty nasty. And, of course, then it goes on the head coach. I mean, you always like to have the head coach that doesn't have any involvement in that. It's not like he's going to do the direct negotiations. But you know from being over, you know, in that stadium, which, of course, is where their office is, I mean, Bill is the boss. And he controls things. And I think what right now, you know, Cal McNair is almost afraid of him in some ways.
That's how
and
it so feels. Like, okay, you're right.
Would you agree with that? I mean, because again, it's like, it's not like Bob McNair, who originally, you know, started the expansion franchise. I mean, his son has taken over. And I think he operates in fear of Bill O'Brien. And so he gives Bill everything he wants. I mean, he gave him, for example, Brian Gaines, the general manager he wanted, and Bill fired him. He's like, I don't want this guy. He didn't get me any tackles. I didn't get Trenton Brown, and I didn't get Nate Sudfeld. I didn't get the guys that I wanted, and so he fires the general man. Now he takes control.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. He seems like they've reached a high watermark, and he keeps accumulating more and more power, even though they haven't progressed. John, if I was Frank Clark, I'd be a little worried about karma, because I'm going to read you a quote about what he said about D. Ford, who last year lined up offsides, negating what would have been a game-clinching interception against the Patriots. I don't know nothing about him, Clark said. I couldn't name a stat. I don't know what the school he went to. I just know he had lined up offside, and anybody who lined up offside at a time like that, I feel like that's a dumb penalty at the end of the day. He's right. You're kind of tempting fate, though, when you point at somebody else's mistake and say that's stupid, because it puts you in a position to look even dumber if you make a similar mistake.
Well, I'm trying to jog my memory, but am I not mistaken? Somewhere in the first half of the Tennessee game, Frank Clark jumped offsides.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's definitely jumped offsides before. He's not Michael Bennett, but he's definitely jumped offsides.
Oh, no question. It's like, how do you bring something up like that, you know, literally a week or so after you've done the same thing? And, I mean, you've seen Frank. I mean, again, you're right. He's not as many penalties as Michael Bennett, but he was always trying to anticipate the snap count, and using his quickness, he was able to, get to the quarterback and all that stuff. But yeah, it's like, sometimes you speak of something and you criticize something, but it's like, you know, remember who you are, because he does the same thing.
Do you guys wonder if that's maybe a subtle shot at Jadeveon Clowney, who has replaced him essentially in Seattle?
Oh, no. No, if Frank Clark doesn't know which school D. Ford went to college at, I doubt he's aware of Clowney's reputation for occasionally jumping off sides.
Fair enough.
Well, also remember, he's hearing what D. Ford has been saying in the last week about how angry he was, you know, having the franchise tag being sent over in a trade to the San Francisco 49ers. And then, of course, Frank Clark's the guy that, filled in his gap and, it ended up getting a first and a second round pick, you know, for the Seahawks. But it's like, yeah, you could see there's a little animosity there, but I'm kind of amazed. I mean, we know that Frank's a good talker. I mean, he was great after the games in Seattle. He was great during the week in Seattle. But as, you know, the team got better and better, he's more outspoken. Now he's in the Super Bowl. He's really outspoken.
It is interesting. Kansas City's decision there. They traded D. Ford. What, they got a second round pick for him? And then they traded a second-round pick and a first-round pick for Clark, whom they paid the contract that they wouldn't give to D. Ford. So they thought he was a significantly better player.
Yeah, and now you're seeing, particularly with Matt Judon over the Baltimore Ravens, they're probably going to do the same thing with him, because they're going to get a third-round compensatory pick for Jazarius Smith. You know, he ended up going to Green Bay and having a Pro Bowl season. And so I think you see the new trend right now. If you have a pass rusher and you know it's going to be tough to get him to a contract, you try to first put the franchise tag on. Because, like, right now, you know, Matt in Baltimore is probably going to be worth about 16.9, you know, based on last year's numbers. And so, if that's that's a year. And so now probably it could be 17 or 18. And so they're figuring, it's like, let's get the second round pick or the first round pick, and we'll try to patch in for him. But it's dangerous when you keep on losing pass rushers. It's hard to replace them. Just ask Seattle.
Professor, sounds like you got a blockbuster day set up on the John Clayton Show that'll be starting at 10 a.m. So we got to make sure everybody tunes in then.
Yeah, you're going to be hearing Mark Sloreth, and you're going to be hearing Mike Gola Jr., and we got loads of stuff.
All right, that is coming up at 10. Thank you very much, John. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It is Danny and Gallant, and Paul said that Patrick Mahomes is not the most important player in this game. Well, then it's got to be Richard. Nope, it's not Richard Sherman either. He's going to tell you who he thinks is most important. That's next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I don't know about y'all, but I think Tyreek Hill is the most fascinating and important player in Super Bowl 54. That speed, it is really something else. It jumps off the screen. In fact, Danny, I think he's the fastest player that I've ever seen play in the NFL.
I don't disagree with that. Dion is up there, but Dion had that stride that maybe accentuate. It's you're parsing different sort of the finer points of it, and I think players today are on average faster than they were then. Tyreek Hill is a guy that you look at and you're like, he's faster than everybody else on the field in a way that no other player in the past 15 years, in my mind, comes close.
I saw his first game in the NFL live. It was Texans Chiefs at the beginning of 2016. He had a punt return for a touchdown in that game that was called back. And I remember going into the locker room afterwards and asking Charles James about it. And James told me, that's the fastest dude I've ever seen. He's fast as bleep, he told me, quote. And I didn't know much about him at the time. He was a fifth-round draft pick. Then you look into it and you're like, oh, that's why he was a fifth-round draft pick. But put that to the side. Every play that he is on the field, someone's going to get open because you have to dedicate extra attention to him. If a play is extended due to a lack of a pass rush, he's so fast, you know he's going to get open. A small enclosed space to him is essentially like a city. He's got so much that he can do with just a little bit of space. He goes back 2 yards, he runs upfield another 5 yards, and you just can't afford to miss a tackle on him. So with all those things there, I know that Patrick Mahomes is the best player probably overall in this game because he's the MVP of last season. And honestly, if you want to make a case for the way that he played in the playoffs in addition to this past regular season, you could say, yeah, he's up there in the MVP talks for this past season. But for me, what the 49ers have to do to Tyreek Hill and what this guy just can do on his own, I really wonder how great of a game he could theoretically have on Sunday.
If San Francisco's pass rush is not able to affect Mahomes, if they're not able to put him under siege and make kind of the pocket collapse around him, I think that Tyreek Hill will be the difference in this game. I think that his speed, I don't think San Francisco has anything they can do on the back end of their defense to stay with him. And I think that any concessions they make to staying over the top are going to open up Travis Kelce. The 49ers' path to victory in this game is pretty clear to me, which is their pass rush, which is exceptionally good, has to be relentless and overwhelming. And it has to render the Chiefs' offense inert. If it gets into a score, if they're not able to consistently stop the Chiefs, I don't think that anybody's going to be able to. The 49ers are not going to be able to outscore the Chiefs. The difficulty with Hill, and this is where we talk about the bigger lessons or the bigger examples, it's impossible for me to differentiate his value and his skills on the field from the off-the-field things. And not because I have the opinion of – it's not because he shouldn't be in the league. That's not the reason. I'm still torn and mixed on how you handle someone who's been accused of the type of things. And I don't know. I don't think the answer is a zero tolerance policy in which you just don't let him in. Put that to the side. The reason they drafted him in the fifth round and the reason they've been able to sign him to the extension that they have is because of the fact that other teams wouldn't take him because of those off-field incidents. Because those off-field incidents have affected his quote-unquote market value, and it's gross for me to even talk about that because I think we're talking about the two incidents, one when he was in college and he choked his then-pregnant fiancée.
Disgusting.
And then the thing that happened most recently where he wasn't charged, but there were clear injuries to his child.
Yep.
In which the police concluded something clearly happened here, but we don't have evidence to pursue them against anybody. it goes right up to the edge of, is that the kind of person you would employ in the NFL? And I would say that a number of teams have answered no, and that's why the Chiefs have been able to get him. And it creates this weird conundrum. He's an incredibly talented player, but it stretches to the very limit that idea of what types of behavior or what type of person will you consider employing in order to get those skills.
John Dorsey didn't care, and you saw it in Cleveland too. He brought in Kareem Hunt, no hesitation whatsoever. This is a guy that takes gambles on players that he feels like have talent, and he says the talent, it matters more than what the guy does off the field. Personally, I'm of the belief that guys like this should not get an opportunity to play in the NFL. It's really one out of spite. Someone who does something that monstrous, that heinous to someone that they love or have any feelings of affection for, I think it's just monstrous and disgusting. And that anyone has the capacity to do that on top of it, it's hard to fathom. It really is, especially when there are multiple incidents. If it's one, even then, it's hard to fathom. But that's also, again, neither here nor there. I do want to focus on this from this perspective. If you're watching this game on Sunday and you see the kind of speed that Tyreek Hill brings to the table, don't you want to add a little extra speed to the Seahawks offense?
Yes.
He is. Yes. He makes you so envious. And that's the thing that I keep on thinking about as we get closer and closer to the Seahawks actually being able to make decisions in free agency and in the draft. If you bring another just absolute freak of an athlete aboard, maybe it's the back of the first round. Unfortunately, someone like Jerry Jeudy, who I would do bad things for, I suppose, he's not going to be available. He's probably a top 10 pick. Wide receiver out of Alabama, for those who don't know. I think he's unbelievably fast, shifty. There are some Hill elements to his game. But if the Seahawks see a guy at the back of the first round or at the back of the second round, like they saw with DK Metcalf, I really think they should bring him in. And I know it's sometimes risky to go after a wide receiver who you don't know whether or not they're going to be able to pick up the system. Like many positions in the NFL, you draft a guy, sometimes it doesn't work out. Even if the guy's an athletic freak, maybe he doesn't have it all between the ears. But I look at the guys that are in that receiver room right now. I look at a DK Metcalf who was able to pick things up pretty quickly. He has a great work ethic per Pete Carroll, so you got to give him credit for that. But that was a guy thought to be just an athletic freak, essentially, coming out of college. You look at some of the other guys that they've brought in, and I mean, Josh Gordon, they get him midseason, and it seemed like he picked the offense up pretty well before Josh Gordon got in his own way again. I think that Malik Turner, he's got some high-level speed as well to stretch the field, and unfortunately he had that drop, but this is a guy too that has that element that he can bring to the table, and I'd like to add more of it, because I think if you have a defense that has some of the issues that the Seahawks have, you can make up for that defensive problem by having an offense that can, in a span of two possessions, three possessions, just completely break a game. That's what Kansas City has right now, and we're going to see a lot of it, I think, in the Super Bowl. And if Tyreek Hill is able to help this Chiefs team get a Super Bowl despite that defense that I don't think is so good, then, yeah, I think he's going to be the most important player in the game.
I would prioritize speed over offensive line.
And I understand
I would prioritize adding more speed to this team over the offensive line, and the reason for that is because I think that having that and doing that in combination with DK Metcalf, who will keep growing, and Tyler Lockett, who is a really effective player, but we're now at the point where he's doing less, not doing more. We're now at the point where he's not returning kickoffs, and he's not necessarily returning punts. And those are realistic and good decisions, I think. But getting more speed on that offense with Russell's ability with the deep ball, that is going to be – I think Russell's always going to be sacked a lot. And I think that has to do as much as him holding onto the ball as anything else. And I think that the more emphasis they put on the offensive line, that's going to be more emphasis they put on run blocking. And there's not evidence that they're particularly good at pass blocking. Let's get some fast guys. Let's get more speed to rush the passer and more speed for the quarterback to throw to.
And guess what? Kansas City's done that because they got Mecole Hardman in the first round this past year. They got in DeMarcus Robinson as well. They keep adding speed despite having a Tyreek Hill. Maybe it was because they were concerned that they were going to lose Tyreek Hill to a suspension this past season, but whatever the case, they didn't stop adding. I think the Seahawks should strongly consider adding a little bit more speed as well. Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. He's Danny O'Neill, and I'm Paul Gallant. There's one 49er that I just can't bring myself to dislike, but Danny, he's going to try to get me there. He's going to give me some clues. Don't go anywhere. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I have a question that I am now going to ask pretty much any player that comes on our show, Paul.
Any player. Okay.
Yep.
Better be
I
good.
Think pretty much any player. I think that this is a can opener of a question. Something that can be used to be telling about both the player and his teammates. We'll get to that here in 4 or 5 minutes. But George Kittle is someone who you have told me you can't really root against.
Oh, I love the guy. He blocks. He doesn't want to be tackled. He's apparently been playing with a torn labrum the last 2 years. He's kind of funny, and he's funny in a natural, non-fake kind of way.
He's kind of the overly enthusiastic. Like, he looks like someone who's just slugged down 3 extra caffeinated sodas and is just ready to go. Like, yeah, let's do this, man.
A little Mountain Dew, code red.
Like, okay. He's ready to go. Okay. And he's a 49er, though, and I'm having a hard time with that. Even as awesome as I thought it was in that game-clinching catch that he had, was it on fourth down against the Saints, where he's got a guy, basically a Saint defender was holding onto his face mask.
Face mask!
He's being dragged down as if he's a can attached to a newlywed's bumper. Like, that was essentially the visual of what was happening to the player, and I'm like, that's pretty, pretty awesome. It's a Niner, so I'm having a hard time fully embracing the idea of the George Kittle experience.
I do not understand it. I don't. I get the jersey, but can we put the jersey aside and appreciate him? He seems like a good guy off the field. I mean, right now, Tyreek Hill's one of my favorite players to watch in the game, and I feel dirty watching it because I can't stand what I think I know about this human being. But with Kittle, there's nothing to take issue with.
No, there's not. And in fact, it seems that he's very, very funny when he was asked about his quarterback and maybe some of the flaws his quarterback exhibits.
I'm telling you, he leaves me on red all the time. I'll be like, hey, Jimmy, I got a question. Maybe on this play, should I run my route like this? No response. Jimmy, you want to go to a movie? No response. And then the next day, he's like, yeah, I got your text. I just didn't respond. Thanks, Jim. That's awesome. So, yeah, he's a bad texter.
G-A-R-A-P-O-L-P-P-O-L-O.
I don't know. Forget it.
Second one was Fred Warner. The first one was George Kittle complaining about his quarterback's texting etiquette. I'm a bad texter, too. In fact, I'm such a bad texter that I just realized that I had left. People were able to see whether I was reading the texts or not. Or
you left your red receipts on?
I think so.
Rookie move, man.
Well, sometimes you do it on purpose, but that's for specific situations.
Really? Why do you do that on purpose? Why do you want people knowing whether you've opened their message or not?
I'm not saying that I do it, but there have been a couple of like dating podcasts that I've listened to that if you feel like someone is not giving you the proper amount of of time, that this is a move that you do to sort of show that, yeah, I'm on my own time. So here's a red receipt and I'm just not responding to your text.
I'm not going to say I haven't done it.
Yeah, this is a common practice that I've seen done before.
So it's not that you left it unread, which would be telling them that I don't care enough about you to even open your message.
It's that you read it and that you did not respond.
What's the timeliness that's expected for a text response? I've always been taught that email, you get 24 hours from when you receive the email to when you should respond to said email, even in business situations. Is it the same with texting?
I don't know what the answer is. I know that I go crazy when I don't get a response to a text. And it's funny because I will very often go to my phone and I will look at a text and I will all of a sudden get distracted by Instagram or a dating app or something else. And I will totally forget about the text that I'm supposed to respond to. I mean, Michael Pompas is coming in here for Blue 42 in a couple of minutes. And there was a day where I left my keys in studio somewhere. I couldn't find them. I texted Michael Pompas like, hey, did you happen to take my keys by chance? And he was like being really helpful and trying to help me find them. And then all of a sudden I just forgot to respond to a text. And then I was texting him a couple of days later. I was like, oh crap, I forgot to respond. Dang, I'm just as bad.
But it drives you crazy when people don't respond to you.
I'm a hypocrite, yes.
That's great.
100%.
I think information that could be useful one day.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Use it against me because honestly, it's something that I feel very disrespectful when I realize that I have forgotten to respond to somebody via text because I know that I know how I feel when I don't get a response to a text.
I have a terrible rationale or explanation that has satisfied absolutely no one when they've complained about my lack of response, which is that I don't even really respond to all my wife's messages. And somehow that doesn't tend to, because I feel like if I'm willing to take the hostility or be that rude to her, that everybody else, their standards should be even lower than my wife's. And that's not necessarily the case. So I'm perpetually in trouble when it comes to my response. The fact that George Kittle complains about his quarterback's texting habits is actually pretty endearing.
It's great. Listen, he's the tight end. The quarterback's got to respond to his questions. What if he's got a big question about some play in the offense? Come on, Jimmy, what are you doing?
That is pretty funny. I would be curious George Kittle's answer to this question, which is the question I'm going to incorporate into most interviews now, which is, which of your teammates would you least like to date your sister? And you can even ask this to someone who doesn't have a sister and say your fictional sister. And where I got it was Brian Robeson, who used to play for the Minnesota Vikings. He did this in the Vikings locker room a couple years ago, and somehow I just found this. I found it while I was surfing through TikTok yesterday, which if you've never surfed through TikTok, don't. It's like crack cocaine.
It's hilarious that you're a TikTok guy, by the way.
It's awful. It's addictive.
You're younger than me, essentially, by being a TikTok guy. I don't know how it works.
It's these 10 second people are dancing to videos or dancing to songs. It's hilarious.
Like
they're doing lip syncing. Oh my gosh.
Danny, wait till you find the shark puppet.
I've seen the shark puppet. The shark puppet is hilarious. But anyway, on TikTok, the first person he asks is Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook is asked, which of your teammates would you least like to date your sister?
Dalvin, what guy on this team would you least like to date your sister?
What the hell?
Diggs.
Why Diggs?
Man, no. We're going to leave it like that. No.
Okay. Seems that he's got some reservations about wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Laquon Treadwell asked the same question.
What guy on this team would you least like to date your sister?
Oh, Stephon Diggs.
Why Diggs?
He's crazy. He's just outrageous. Don't know what he's going to say. Just don't know what to expect every day. So he couldn't date my sister.
Adam Thielen, cut number 8. His answer is exactly the same.
What guy on this team would you least like to date your sister?
Least like to date my sister, Diggs. 100%.
Why Diggs?
Because he's not a guy that you want to bring home to your parents. Like, you don't want your sister to bring him home to your parents, so therefore she can't date him.
I think I know why. I mean, we've seen Diggs blow up on Kirk Cousins.
He started yelling and screaming on the sidelines a couple of different times, including a point when they were ahead right. over the Saints, right?
That's his quarterback. And, I mean, I can only imagine how much of a diva he might be with other people in his personal life.
And here is Diggs in cut number 7 when informed that he's become the most popular answer to this question.
What guy on this team would you least like to date your sister? And I might add, you're starting to be the runaway favorite for this.
Would nobody want me to date this, is it? I'm a great guy. I'm actually a great guy.
There's actually seems to be a few guys that don't think that.
You feel differently about me?
Yeah.
You just don't know me well enough. That's what it is. It's the beard. All right, who don't I want to date my sister? Weatherly.
Why Weatherly?
Because he's ugly.
I knew that was coming. That was the problem.
I think that's going to be my new standby. It's something that can be informative about everybody, from someone else on the team to their own feelings about him. I really like the answer. And it does make me have some questions about Stephon Diggs.
It makes me have a lot of questions about Stephon Diggs. Jeez, bro. Get it together. Clean it up.
It's Danny and Gallant. We've got Michael Bumpus. He's going to join us next.